Russia, you've talked about this in prior responses, but I'm just wondering if you can summarize what are those key fundamental issues that are facing the people of Lebanon in Beirut today. From abroad, some issues that come to mind, looking at this through the lens of the mainstream media, is sectarianism, is one side being pro-West and the other side being more pro-Syria or pro-Iran. And then, of course, there's the whole Israeli-Palestine conflict. And I'm wondering, from your much more authentic perspective, of course, how do you define those root issues that were there before Hariri's assassination, that were there before the recent Israeli incursion into Lebanon? How would you summarize those issues?
Well, I mean, the main issue for me has always been the fact that there has been a rising number of, like, the percentage of people who are in Lebanon now who are under the poverty line has been rising steadily since during the time of Hariri and after his assassination as well. The unemployment rate is extremely high. You have around, like, the latest figure I saw was about 60% of the population living, or 50% under the poverty line. And these things often get clouded over by headlines that are more, you know, shiny and starry and kind of thing to people, like sectarianism and Iran and Syria and, you know, the United States and all. But really, the core issues are the fact that a large number of the population are living in poverty. And that's always defined, you know, that's always been the defining issue for me. And of course, it's compounded by sectarianism, which keeps these people, I think, poor.
And what about the situation with regards to the current occupation of Palestine and Palestinian refugees? Are those what you would consider to be root issues and concerns of a campaign like I'm Somebody with Nobody?
Oh, of course, that's one of the central concerns of I'm Somebody with Nobody. The Palestinians in Lebanon are very reticent to speak out, especially after the war, because of the way they will be positioned, and they're not they're not looking forward to any more victimization than they're already subject to. So they don't really deal with the government. They don't speak out very much. They just don't want to be involved in Lebanese politics at all. And this is a major problem. I mean, the government has offered, you know, kind of very flimsy band-aid solutions about, you know, better services and more jobs. But the reality and, you know, the people in the camps are very, very aware that, you know, this is not going to be as rosy as the government claims it to be. So this is a problem that's, you know, been there for a long time and is going to continue to be there for a long time unless the government actually steps up to its responsibilities and realizes that the Palestinians living in Lebanon are of the Lebanese fabric, whether they like to admit that or not. And the fact that a lot of Lebanese people have never actually visited a camp, and you can live your life in Lebanon very comfortably knowing that, you know, not knowing that that Palestinian camps exist and what the conditions in these camps are. So a big part of what we want to do also is to raise awareness about the conditions in the camps.
Russia, obviously, since the Israeli bombardment, for international solidarity activists, Lebanon has become much more of an issue. And one question that these international solidarity activists ask themselves is, how can we be most effective? For me, my response to that is always to say we should be organizing. This is not like doing either or, but one thing we should be doing is organizing locally and creating our own centers of struggle, our own fronts of struggle, because the battle for social justice is everywhere. But putting aside that, my own personal response that is one effective way. Like I said, it's not an either or. How would you respond to this question about how can we effectively show solidarity with the grassroots struggles of Lebanon mm-hmm. from here in Montreal. And I ask that keeping in mind that some of the things that, that people have talked about is simply, and importantly, fighting against the media misportrayals of what's going on. That is, you know, simply mm-hmm. defining mm-hmm. this as Iran versus the U.S., describing Hezbollah mm-hmm. as a terrorist organization, and Canada continues to define Hezbollah as a terrorist organization. During mm-hmm. the bombardment and with the crisis, there was an emphasis on raising money and funds for relief. But speaking mm-hmm. now in December, as we enter into 2007, what kind of message do you have for people who care about these issues, who are engaged in these issues locally, and want to show true solidarity?
Well, actually, first, there's something I just wanted to say about the interest in Lebanon, media portrayal of Lebanon during the Israeli invasion, during the Israeli bombardment, more precisely, is that, I mean, obviously, it's really wonderful that a lot of people were extremely shocked and horrified and really did want to do something. But I also found it extremely unnerving how much attention the war on Lebanon, you know, has garnered from both activists and the media. All of a sudden, you know, you would hear the word Lebanon uttered every 5 minutes on CNN, and, you know, journalists were pouring into the country. And there was this sense that, oh my God, how could this happen to Lebanon? While in Ida, at the time, you had 100 people dying every day, and Gaza was getting it so much worse than Lebanon. Every time something would happen here, it would happen tenfold in Gaza, and these were completely forgotten. So I think one of the things I would like to say is that it's very easy to get swept up by, you know, these headlines happening. Not that, I mean, obviously that the attack on Lebanon was horrendous and it did deserve, you know, attention and work and dedication. But, you know, Lebanon is very much part of a region, and it cannot, you know, no country in this region can be taken in a void. And I find it very disturbing that, you know, places like Haida or Afghanistan or Palestine can easily be forgotten in this media frenzy that surrounds Lebanon. And really, I mean, the central wound at the heart of all of this is Palestine. And I don't think we should... I think it's very important to remember that. And I also agree with you completely that local forms of organizing are usually the best ways to organize, rather than, I mean, we had an influx of people coming into Lebanon, which was great during the war and after the war, to help out. But I feel that a lot of them would have been much more productive speaking out in places like the United States or in Canada or in Europe, because centers of power, and those are the places that need to change first and foremost for anything else to change in the world.
To shift gears a bit now, Rasha, I want to ask you about the Israeli bombardment. And I'm wondering if you could mm-hmm. share with us your own personal recollection of that bombardment. You were in Beirut at the time. When it started, where were you, and what were your thoughts at that time as those bombs started falling and it was clear that there was going to be a very harsh Israeli, I hate calling it a response because it's not even justified, but a harsh Israeli attack on Lebanon and the people of Lebanon?
Well, there was just an extreme amount of shock, I think, in the beginning. I mean, I was in Beirut the whole time. I live in, I don't particularly like using the phrases West Beirut and East Beirut, but I was actually in, I live in, if we can call it that. And, I mean, throughout the entire war, I think, well, myself and, you know, a lot of the people that I know would veer between shock and, you know, utter fear and elation at some point. because, I mean, the Israeli army has not suffered the losses it did in this war since 1948. So for a lot of us, this was, I mean, this was, you know, kind of retribution that we were kind of... It hit a spot. Let's just, you know, leave it at that. But, I mean, I live in an area in Beirut where... which was relatively safe. The targeting was... I mean, it was obvious that the Israelis were targeting Shia areas. And for me, it was very much... I mean, I wouldn't hesitate to call it a sort of ethnic cleansing. And in the Bekaa Valley and in the southern suburbs of Beirut, which are all Shia strongholds. They're not all Hezbollah, but they're all Shia, heavily Shia areas, were completely decimated. I mean, there's countless villages in the south that just no longer exist. The southern suburbs, a large part of the suburbs are just no longer there. And this was basically to break what they refer to as Hezbollah's stronghold, because, I mean, the physical space of it and the way the southern suburbs were built very much served Hezbollah in keeping it intact and tight and closed off a certain degree. So, I mean, I'm 50 minutes away from the southern suburbs by car. I'm, you know, very close, and we could hear the bombs wherever they, very, very loudly wherever they fall. But at the same time, I was sitting at war that was unfolding 15 minutes away from me on TV, knowing at certain points that I was safe. And this was a very, very disturbing way of experiencing it, I think. Especially because a lot of people I know live in the southern suburbs in Dahi, and who did not, I mean, we tend to forget that, you know, so many people, I mean, it's an insanely crowded area. And what I also found extremely disturbing is that the southern suburbs of Beirut, when they were being hit, all of a sudden became not a part of Beirut in the way they were, you know, the way they were portrayed. They would say, you know, well, they're not hitting Beirut, they're not going to hit Beirut, or are they going to hit Beirut? When they've been hitting Beirut from day one, but because there became such a schism between the Shia and the rest of the population, all of a sudden this physical space became, you know, bounded off and not part of Beirut anymore. So, you know, I think that that schism intensified during the war and after it now.
Russia, this show is airing on January 1st. It's a bit of a cliche question, but mm-hmm. I think it's a useful question still. As you look ahead to 2007, what are the challenges that you and the people that you're working with are facing? How do you look to 2007 in terms of the organizing challenges that groups like I'm Somebody with Nobody and related groups are facing?
Well, okay, I'm also going to give sort of a cliched answer, but I think it's also extremely true. It's sometimes very, very difficult to keep the steam that you're running on going. It's too easy to get disillusioned, I think, and just say, oh, well. And, I mean, at least on a personal level, this is one of, you know, my biggest challenges is to find some sort of optimism and cling to it. So, I mean, everything that's happening right now is making it much more difficult to do that.